Lance Hubmeier.
If you're going to go stick your head in the sand like that, get out of the sport.
Mike Coppinger.
It's creating a huge mess. It's absurd.
No, you're wrong. So
the only seems like a cash grab.
You need to turn up and you need to be on it.
We just started going at it.
You got to go eat.
The Pug and Cop Boxing Show. On The Athletic.
Hey, everybody. We're back again with another episode of the Pug and Cop Boxing Show. This is Mike Coppinger alongside Lance Pugmire of The Athletic. And today, we're going to be joined by the new chief boxing officer for Triller, Peter Kahn, a veteran of the fight game. He's going to explain all of the plans Triller has for boxing, how they're trying to shake it up with concerts and entertainment, and what lies ahead in the future. And then we'll talk about some of this weekend's fights. Sergey Lipinets against Jaron Boots Ennis, Joe Smith Jr., Maxime Vlasov, and then we also have the Stan Ioannis against Thomas Delorme fight. Plus, we'll also get into a bit of the 130-pound landscape and much, much more. So if you haven't already, please like, subscribe, rate, and review. Now let's get right into it. Lance, we're going to have Peter Kahn here. And look, you and I have known Peter for a long time as a boxing manager. Now he's taking on a much different role in putting together all the matchups for Triller and really being the only boxing guy at Triller. And I think what's really interesting is you and I have asked the question a million times, heard the question a million times. Why isn't there a boxing guy at The Zone? Why isn't there a boxing guy at ESPN? Well, now there actually is a boxing guy, but is that Triller? It's kind of ironic. And I can't wait to hear what Peter has to say about that and a lot more. But first, you know, you and I are obviously in different age brackets. I'm going to be 35 later this month. I'm wondering, not that I'm Triller's target demo. I mean, Triller's probably targeting even younger than me, but I'm still in that 18 to 34 demo for a couple more weeks at least. I wonder, what was your initial reaction to when you see this kind of new startup with concerts, influencers, you know, maybe cross-promotion fights? How does it attract you or not attract you?
Look, I think at the end of the day, Mike, it's like, you know, my position on it is that it helps boxing. I mean, boxing, like any sport, and I think baseball has kind of been in the same situation. You need that younger audience to succeed. So if you have some plans, whether it's, you know, headlining a card with Jake Paul or bringing in the type of incredible music that Triller has with its fight shows, I'm all for it. And I, to be honest with you, I think that the way that they've selected some of this music, like with Black Keys coming up on this next show, it does actually appeal toward, you know, toward people like myself too. So I think that they've covered a very wide age range, and I think they're doing right by the sport. I'm really interested to see or to hear what Peter has to say about Triller's plans for boxing, because, you know, the way that they've jumped in and landed a Teofimo Lopez fight is very significant. And it seems as if clearly they want to be around for quite a while to come.
Now we're going to welcome into the show Peter Kahn. He is a two-time Manager of the Year nominee. And just recently he became the chief boxing officer for Triller, who have entered the boxing space with a lot of money and big hopes and ambitions. Peter Kahn is the boxing guy behind it. And it's funny, Peter, because you see a lot of networks that have been in boxing for a long time that don't even have a boxing guy. Triller does have one, and it's you. And you have your espresso, too, I see. I hope you're enjoying that. I like the little glass you have there. It looks very professional.
Thank you.
So you're chief espresso officer as well, I guess. But first off, how did this all come about? Because I think a lot of people were shocked. A lot of people know you, of course, from your days with Don King and your days managing fighters. And then seemingly out of nowhere, you're here running Triller on the boxing side.
Well, first and foremost, as always, it's great to be here with you, Mike, and Lance. You know, obviously, I'm a big fan of the podcast, and you guys are two of the best in the business. So I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me. And Mike, I mean, it really was organic in the way that this came about. You know, this opportunity presented itself out of another necessity. And that necessity was predicated on the Teofimo Lopez versus George Kambosos purse bid. And so, honestly, I did watch the Triller November show with Mike Tyson and Roy Jones Jr., and I was very entertained. I thought it was something I hadn't seen before. And I was amazed. Look, I've told you this before, that if I was a betting man, I would have lost everything when it came to guessing the pay-per-views for that fight. So I was very impressed. But I was more so impressed by the way that they were able to capture this wide demographic, right? You know, really being able to draw these young viewers via Jake Paul and the music artists, having Snoop as a commentator, and then being able to capture an older demographic that was maybe taking a trip down memory lane, a little bit of nostalgia, right? And, you know, and just being able to take that all in, right? And look, there was this, I mean, Mike Tyson's an icon. There's a bit of that mystique where people were like, they're going to get to watch Mike Tyson fight, right? So that was exciting. But then I hadn't really thought much about Triller. I was very focused on the fighters I manage and trying to keep them busy and working with the promoters we work with, and things were moving along. And then, you know, before that fight, George Kambosos Jr. had gone to London on October 31st. He defeated Lee Selby to become the mandatory for Teofimo Lopez, the undisputed lightweight champion of the world. And when that happened, we entered into a negotiation period, meaning our promoter, Dibella Entertainment, and Top Rank. And through that process, we had presented some ideas as wanting to bring this fight to Australia. We had some interested investors, but unfortunately in Australia, and still to this date, they have a mandatory 14-day quarantine, which means you get off the airplane, doesn't matter who you are, and which we saw this happen with the Australian Open, with these professional tennis players. You get taken to a hotel where you are hard quarantined for 14 days in a room. You cannot leave the room. You can't open your door. You're in that room. So that would have been very challenging to bring over ESPN, to bring over Top Rank, to bring over all the people that would need to come over. It just wasn't feasible. But the thing is during that time, we were never made an offer. Top Rank never made an offer to Dibella Entertainment in writing, text message, WhatsApp, verbal, you name it, pigeon carrier. We never got an offer. So as things were getting closer, I started to panic a little bit for my client, because you work so hard to become a mandatory. With a mandatory comes this added value of being able to go to purse bid, okay, which leaves it open to everybody. And you just can't let that go. And so in hindsight, when you look at it, and you wrote a really, really great article about this, Mike, how, you know, Top Rank, in essence, was attempting to bully DAZN into not bidding, which means Top Rank would have been able to come in and possibly steal that bid for a low number. And I just really wasn't going to let that happen. And so what I did was, when I realized we weren't getting an offer and I realized purse bid was being called and it was called, I had to do something. And I basically, you know, threw a Hail Mary, and I flew out to California. I met with Ryan Kavanaugh. I explained to him the situation. What I said to him is, I said, Ryan, if you want to show people that you're serious about being in the boxing space, not just about influencers, not just about crossover fights and legends, but if you really want to make a splash, this is your opportunity. You have an opportunity to pay a premium, and make no mistake, he knows it was a premium. You know, this wasn't like I sold him a bill of goods, but in order to really secure that opportunity and show people that you want to make a statement, that you want to be disruptive, that you're going to have to bid this type of number. And I went there as George Kambosos's manager, make no mistake about that. Okay. And through this process, I got to know Ryan. The purse bid took place, and you know, after the purse bid, he had asked me if I would consider playing a bigger role for Fight Club, for Triller Fight Club, which didn't exist during the first fight. Triller Fight Club was a company that was started with him and Snoop Dogg after the Tyson Jones fight. And so, you know, once the purse bid was over, once he realized this big buzz that he received, and that Triller, the word Triller in the space received, he realized he didn't really have a boxing guy per se. And I thought about it, and, you know, I said, I said, I would love to pursue that, because what he's doing in this four quadrant type of entertainment is really unique. And so having the entertainers, the influencers, the legends slash crossovers, and the real boxing, I find it to be exciting. And I think that, you know, that it was a great opportunity. And I said yes.
I mean, Peter, I think you're giving Bernard Hopkins a run for his money for longest answer ever. So we appreciate it. We have a new record on the Pug and Cobb Boxing Show. But we appreciate the insight. And a disclaimer for all the listeners, I will be on the Triller Fight Club broadcast next week with Jake Paul against Ben Askren. But Peter, so how did it grow into this new role now where you're basically doing everything on the boxing side? Because you are the boxing guy there. You're making matchups, going through the actual promotion of the fights, doing the undercard fights. I'm sure you're dealing with medicals and licensing and all of the nonsense that people don't see behind the scenes.
So you're right. And I'll say this, and you know, maybe a lot of people don't know, maybe some people do know. When I was 22 years old, I started with Don King Productions. I'm 49 years old. I did airport runs. I folded chairs. I did medical runs. I swept the ring. I ran gloves. I did whatever I was told to do in as the lowest person on the totem pole in boxing operations. And that's the way that you learn every aspect of a promotional company. And so, of course, over the course of a decade, I also learned and saw a lot. And you just learn how to really what it takes to be a promoter. And the other thing is, you know, as a manager, I'm constantly at shows with my fighters, and I know what it's like to be on both sides of the table. And so while there's a lot of minutia, while there's a lot of detail when it comes to promoting, it's not foreign territory for me. So it was really easy in that sense. It's also helped me identify some of the voids or needs for the Triller team, which, you know, you bring the right people in and you make sure that you have people that know how to do those positions, and it makes things easy.
All right, Lance, let's take a real quick pause here as we hear from one of our sponsors.
Yeah, I mean, Peter, to go back to what you were saying about the Teofimo and Kambosos deal, I just wanted to ask some questions because for the listeners, maybe not everyone knows how the purse bid process works, but obviously this is supposed to be like a blind process where none of the fellow promoters know what the other one is doing. How did it come to, for Kavanaugh, how did he know like what price would get this fight? And at the end of the day, you can argue the case he overpaid given what the other bids were. So how did that whole thing play out?
So remember, when I went there, obviously I'm there as a manager wanting to really do the best for my fighter. Uh-huh. But at the same time, I really wanted to leave no chance. And then I'll say this: when we talked about this, I said, look, whatever you pair this with is going to help carry the pay per view. So we're not relying exclusively on Lopez Kambosos to get you the amount of buys that you need to cover and make a profit on that bid. I said, but at the same time, nothing would surprise me with Eddie Hearn and Matchroom in the Zone. It wouldn't surprise me that they would feel the same way and that they would put an aggressive bid. And we truly believed that they would come in the $5 million mark, really to make a statement themselves, to take Teofimo and put him on the Zone, which could then have set up, we were just kind of, you know, in their mind walking through it, right? If they have him or N. George on DAZN, it leads into a possible Devin Haney or a possible Ryan Garcia fight. All of a sudden, you have the next two fights.
Absolutely, and he had expressed enthusiasm for landing the Teofimo fight publicly.
With all respect, Eddie bid $3.5 million. Mm-hmm. That's a great bid. I mean, that is a great bid, and so that still would have made George over $1 million, and it would have made Teofimo, a lot of money. I mean, it was probably very fair market value for that fight.
One other question on this, just because you mentioned it to Mike, the bullying that took place from Top Rank to DAZN, is this something you found out after the fact in Mike's story, or is this something you were privy to even before the final numbers were posted?
I had no idea about any of this until I read Mike's story. And I read Mike's story when I was in it might have been right after the Canelo fight. It seems right. Something like that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, I think, and no, I didn't know about it. I was shocked. I mean, honestly, it was shocking to me. Simply because that they were actual emails. Like, I found it to be shocking. But it, you know what it did? It reinforced to me that I did the right thing. It reinforced to me that what if it worked?
Yeah, exactly.
And I did the and I did the math. And I'm going to tell you something. If it would have worked, by the time George got his 35%, by the time he paid his provision of service to Dibella, he would have had $500,000. Then he pays me 10%, his trainer 10%. Let me tell you something.
I did good.
It, you know, it was an illuminating story that Mike had. Anytime that we can cast some sunshine on what goes on in the boxing business, which is, we know, is not always on the up and up, I think it's a good thing. I wanted to, and let's do some more of that right here, because, you know, I think a lot of fans are wondering, like, what is the extent of boxing, real boxing to come on Triller? Do you know any specific plans right now? Beyond Teofimo and Kambosos that you can talk about, and what exactly is your hope for Triller and what it does with genuine, you know, honest to goodness boxing?
So let's look at April 17th first. It's a great question, because April 17th, we have Regis Progray fighting Ivan Redcatch. Regis Progray, arguably one of the top two or three 140 pounders in the world, lost a very close fight to Josh Taylor. And as far as I'm concerned, Progray Redcatch is a fight that PBC would have probably had as a Showtime or Fox main event. And I really do believe that that is where what we're doing is we're introducing, and I say real boxing, you know, real boxing, right? I mean, world championship caliber boxing to this audience that might be coming to see Jake Paul. They might be coming to see Justin Bieber, but they're going to say, you know what? I really enjoyed watching that Regis Progray, and I'm going to follow him on social. Now I'm following him on Instagram. Now I'm following him on Twitter. Now I'm following him on Triller. And now when he fights the next time, wherever that is, I'm going to go watch him, because now I'm a fan, or whomever, you know, and that's the idea. So to answer your question, yes, every card is going to have that. And you'd be surprised. Every major promoter has called me and said, hey, how can we work together? How can we put, how can we do something? Because with the limitations on dates right now, just because of the way the world has been the last year, and you know, we've seen it. They're just, I mean, there haven't been as many dates going around. There are a lot of promoters that have contracts that they need to fill, and they're not against the idea of provision of servicing somebody, making a fight. It's a win-win. They get paid. Now they hand their fighter over for one night. Okay. That fighter now gets exposed to an entire different demographic, culture graphic, and their stock rises, because all of a sudden they might come in with 50,000 social media followers. They put on a great performance. They get promoted by all of these other celebrities and entities that are there. Next thing you know, they leave there with hundreds of thousands of new followers, and they take that with them back to their promoter.
Absolutely.
So, Peter, you know, you mentioned Progray Redcatch. Progray, undoubtedly, that was no hyperbole. He's a great fighter, certainly one of the best pound for pound, you know, top 25 or so. And to your point about PBC, Showtime, and Fox, PBC just had Danny Garcia and Ivan Redcatch headline Showtime last year. So I think it is a worthy undercard fight for sure. What do you have planned, though, in the coming months? Because we know we have Teofimo Lopez against George Kambosos on June 5th. I'm sure you want to put a good undercard fight there. And then we have the Oscar De La Hoya, the Golden Boy, fighting. That's on July 3rd, right?
Yep, that's right. That's on July 3rd. I mean, look, Oscar De La Hoya, we're going to match him with a very interesting, very competitive, probably crossover fight. We'll probably see him fight somebody very competitive in the MMA space, which will be exciting. I mean, it's going to be an exhibition, and, you know, Oscar, I guess, hasn't fought what professionally. Is it 12 years, 15 years? Do you guys remember?
2008 was 13, his last fight against Manny Pacquiao. So,
right. So look, I mean, it's Oscar De La Hoya. This guy's a legend. I mean, it's, you know, this is one of the best fighters ever to fight. And there's, once again, I really believe, and this is where Ryan's vision as a non-boxing guy is so refreshing. Because sometimes we'll be talking and he'll say something, and then I'll remember he's looking at it from different eyes. right? He doesn't know the rules that we all live by, that we don't even know why we live by them, right? Like, why do we live by these rules in boxing that seem to be rules, but like, who made these rules? And why do we have to play by those rules?
Yeah, give me an example.
The way that we look at making fights. You know, who said it has to be? Look at the commentating team. Why has no one ever changed that up until now? You know, I mean, it's entertaining. Why is it so? And look, I got to give, let's give credit to other people. Like, I mean, Matchroom did the Jake Paul fight during Miami fight night. And I know that did well, right? And I think that, you know, just the way that adding the entertainment, like, why does it have to be a traditional, you know, why do we have to sign fighters? If the goal is to entertain and make money, why do we have to have 100 fighters under contract that we have to fight three times a year where 3% of them might ever make us money? Why can't we just give people, like they used to do back in the day when Madison Square Garden just promoted fights and the Forum in LA just promoted fights and they didn't have necessarily fighters under contract yet? That's you know, that's kind of what I'm saying. So about De La Hoya, we might have an audience that feels that nostalgia, that wants to see Oscar come in and look great. And then there might be this young audience who's heard about Oscar De La Hoya, and now they're going to get to see the Golden Boy fight.
Yeah, Peter, the question that we hear a lot, and I'm sure you hear it more than anyone, is how long is Triller really going to be involved and invested in boxing to this degree? Because we've all seen other players come into the space, come and go, you know, Rock Nation and a host of others, 50 Cent. But do you think Triller's here for, I don't want to say the long haul, but the short-term long haul, or is this a kind of a flesh in the pan thing?
No, I think this is definitely long-term, specifically because of the fact that Triller's not signing fighters. They're not operating in this traditional space. They're going to do 4 to 5 shows per year. You know what I mean? And when you fight on a Triller show, it's just this great night of entertainment and exposure. Not competing with Top Rank, not competing with Matchroom, not competing with Golden Boy, not competing with PBC, you know, not competing with any of those promoters, you know, just sort of really just adding. In fact, boxing should thank Ryan Kavanaugh and the concept of Triller Fight Club, because all it's going to do is bring younger fans into the sport.
Is there going to be like a ratio that you're going to have like a fixed ratio per card? Like, you'll know, we'll have one novelty fight, we'll have one old timer fight, we'll have one hybrid fight, and we'll have one real fight. How does that work?
I like Lance, how he termed it, novelty and old timer. I prefer to call it, as Ryan says, legends and influencers.
Okay. Right.
So I think at the end of the day, even us, the three of us here, right, we're fight guys. I think we lose sight that there's a bigger world out there. And I introduced my 11-year-old. I have three boys, my youngest son, okay, Mateo. I introduced him to Jake Paul at the press conference in Las Vegas, because during the Tyson Jones fight, and this is a true story, and I've said it time and time again, because this is what stuck out in my head that night, was I'm sitting in my room, kind of waiting more for the main event to happen. And all of a sudden, my 11-year-old comes running downstairs screaming, "Jake Paul knocked Nate Robinson dead." And then he true. Was done.
That
he
not was, funny. It's not funny, but it's true. Yeah.
But he. But what I'm saying is, that's all he was interested in.
Uh-huh.
And then all he was interested in was the memes and following the reaction on social media, participating in the reaction, sharing those memes, you know, because that's what interested him, because that's what he can connect to. And so I really believe that there's a bit of this for everyone. The nostalgia with the legends, the MMA versus boxing with the crossover fights. One of these days, one of these MMA guys is gonna upset one of these boxing guys and people are gonna go crazy, right? And there's a little bit of hope in that, right? Then you have the traditional boxing. Our undercard has Lorenzo Simpson, has Quentin Randall.
Fantastic prospect.
Great talent.
Truck Simpson,
Right. And Truck Simpson, I mean, what a great place for him to showcase, you know? And that's one of the great things about some of these guys that are independent, unsigned fighters. Why should unsigned fighters not have the ability to participate on shows? You know, why do they have to go the club show route? Why can't they have an opportunity? And you know what? This can end up leading to some of these guys getting signed. God bless them. I hope it happens.
Let's talk about Jake Paul quick, Peter, because we know how controversial he is, how much flack he gets. One thing I do want to say, well, two things. One is that all these fighters that hate on Jake Paul, he does a fantastic job promoting himself. And if more fighters did that and took the initiative, I think they'd be bigger too. Because this guy's been promoting the hell out of this event. And two is, I know I'm going to catch flack for this, but I've spoken to a lot of legit world-class fighters who tell me, you know what? Jake Paul is not bad. I know he's a novice, but that guy has hands. What, you know, I know you've boxed a lot, that you've been around the game a long time. Tell the listeners though, what Jake Paul, when you talk to people, because I know you've seen him spar in the gym and all that, how good or not good is he?
I have a lot of respect for Jake Paul. And I'm not saying that because I'm with Triller. I'm not saying that because the show's coming out. I'm telling you that he eats, breathes, sleeps, and lives boxing. I'm friends with his trainer, former cruiserweight contender BJ Flores. And, you know, Jake works hard. And look, this is his third professional fight. Like, let's give the guy a break, right? I mean, the guy didn't come up as a fighter in the traditional sense. But I can tell you that his entire life revolves around being the best fighter he can be. And I really do believe, and by the way, physically, he's a big, strong guy. And I really do believe that as this progresses for him, whether or not Jake Paul ever ends up to challenge for anything meaningful as a professional fighter, he's improving. He's dedicated to the sport and he respects the sport. And, you know, this is the guy that's going to go out there and leave it in the ring. I'm not saying that lightly. I manage fighters. Okay. Like I know boxing. I know fighters. This is his life. I mean, this is his life. This is something that he takes very seriously. And when you see somebody devoting that amount of effort and time and showing the respect to the sport, how can you not appreciate that?
No doubt about it. As much as, you know, Mike talked about the promotion, and some of the promotion is actually very humorous and stuff like that. And so I think people can jump to the conclusion of he's not taking it seriously. But I can remember sitting ringside at the Staples Center with Jake Paul when I was interviewing his brother Logan before his fight. And Jake was listening intently to each question. He wanted to know as much as possible about boxing. And then you go into the gym with him at Wildcard and see how hard he works. You know, look, let's be honest. I mean, not to, you know, to break down this fight thoroughly, but Ben Askren is a wrestler, right? And
right.
Jake Paul is definitely has a lot to fight for when it comes up on this Triller show, because there's a lot more before him. So I think it is, from that standpoint, it is going to be a pretty interesting event. And the other thing that I wanted to say, I don't know that that was a question, Peter, but the other thing I wanted to say is what I thought that Triller did a great job with in that Tyson show was mixing in the music. I mean, you had, in my opinion, the best rapper ever, Snoop Dogg, you know, doing some great shows, an extended set. And just the way that they had that feel, it didn't look awkward. It fit right in between fights. And just that feel, I think, does Ryan Kavanaugh also get the credit for that as well? Because just the way that balance was in play, I think that is going to bring in this younger audience that boxing needs.
Like I said, I step back sometimes on these Zoom calls that I'm now a part of, and I listen and I watch, because part of it is not playing by those rules.
Yeah.
I mean, he's basically, with the team, assembled a Grammy performance worthy talent for this coming show. Justin Bieber, Black Keys, Saweetie, Doja Cat, Diplo and Major Lazer, and then Mount Westmore. The first time that Snoop Dogg, Ice Cube, Too Short, and E-40 are going to perform as a group. That alone is a pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No
you know, doubt. So, I mean, then you add in, I mean, look, our Legends fight, our crossover fight is kind of interesting. Steve Cunningham stepped in for Antonio Tarver, who's going to be fighting Frank Mir. I mean, it's entertainment. It's called, you know, sports and entertainment. No one expects Frank Mir to win, but he's coming to fight.
I wanted to ask one more quick question, Mike. you know, you mentioned the idea of working with promoters, and, you know, hopefully that can happen for you, but I would say that that's probably not something that you can take to the bank on, given, you know, that they want to be selfish. Are you going to hone in on purse bids? You know, if there's high profile purse bid fights going on, is that when you're especially going to strike and say, let's bring those fights in? Because, you know, these are either title fights or significant bouts.
So I think one of the unique things about my position and me in this position is that I really truly feel that I'm well-liked and have a good relationship with all the major promoters, because I work with them so closely with fighters that I actually manage that are with them. On the same night, on April 17th, for instance, I have Aaron Aponte fighting on the Matchroom show in Florida on the Demetrius Andrade show. I'll be in Atlanta and I have a guy fighting on the Matchroom show. But to answer your question, I really do believe that a lot of promoters, let's look at it this way. There are fighters that are going to be ESPN featured fighters, DAZN featured fighters, you know, PBC Showtime/Fox featured fighters, right? Mm-hmm. And Golden Boy, DAZN featured fighters. Well, sure. Do I think that they're going to come to me and say, hey, let's take a guy off our platform and put him on Triller? I don't. But there are other fighters that would make very entertaining fights. Remember, I'm only obligated to make the best fights possible for fans because it's a one-off. At the end of the night, those guys go home and they go back to their promoters. So that's number one, right? I do believe that you will see instances where that happens, where you'll be like, oh, interesting, but that's a Matchroom fighter fighting on Triller. Okay. Or a Golden Boy fighter, a Top Rank fighter, whomever. Okay. Then the second part is, no, we're not honing in or zeroing in on purse bids, because once again, the statement was made. Lopez Cambosis, you know, that the statement that Triller wants to participate and not only bring in this younger audience with the entertainment and the influencers, but really wants to bring the hardcore boxing audience in. And we're hoping, and the thought process is that this undisputed lightweight championship of the world with Teofimo Lopez would bring that audience, right? So in that sense, I think that that is why I was able to convince Ryan when I went and made my pitch originally as just the manager, George Cambosis, that he understood that and he saw the value in that. I mean, look, a purse bid was just called for Philip Hergovich and Michael Hunter. And everyone assumed that we were going to go in and bid for this eliminator. No. I mean, it was a unique case. Now, if there's a Ryan Garcia, Javier Fortuna, right? I mean, come on, that was interesting.
Yeah.
That was interesting, right? I mean, that'll make you think like, well, Ryan Garcia would be great on Triller with that audience and then the entertainer. I mean, that would have been right, but they worked their deal out. That's great. But I mean, I think there's very few stars in boxing right now that could be worth going to bat like that you know is going to bring the hardcores. So I think it's just going to be a case-by-case thing. But I also do believe that we're going to work with other promoters, and I think you're going to see signed fighters come and do those one-offs.
Peter, last question before we let you go. We know you're busy putting out fires and the sort. This is going to be your first show actually working with Triller. And what do you hope the everlasting effect is when people who maybe don't watch boxing often watch your show next Saturday?
I'm hoping that we can get an audience that is coming to see Jake Paul find interest in the undercard and the Pro Gray Redcatch fight. And I'm hoping that they will take that and become boxing fans more than casuals. And I'm hoping that the hardcore fans will respect and enjoy a night of entertainment and appreciate that it has boxing in it. You know what I mean? And that they can appreciate that they were entertained. And, you know, I'll leave you with this. One of the things that stuck out in my mind after the Tyson Jones fight was that both Bruce Trampler and Kevin Ioli applauded that. And I believe it was Kevin Ioli or Bruce, I don't remember who, that said boxing can learn something from this.
All right, well, there you have it. Peter Kahn, Chief Boxing Officer for Triller. We sure appreciate the time, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you, gentlemen. It's a pleasure. I hope to see you guys soon.
Thank you, Peter.
All right, Lance, let's take a real quick pause here as we hear from one of our sponsors. Lance, you know, initial takeaway for me is that, you know, Triller is probably here to stay for at least a little bit. I mean, they saw great success with that Mike Tyson and Roy Jones fight, over 1.5 million pay-per-view buys. I think they're expecting a pretty big demands for this Jake Paul-Ben Askren fight. And obviously success and, you know, or lack thereof is going to probably dictate how long they're in this for. But it does seem to me that this Jake Paul fight is trending pretty well. What do you think? Is it trending well?
Oh, I think so, because you've not only got Jake Paul, you know, who's appealing to all of his, you know, Instagram fans and all of the social media fans that that he has built over time. You know, you've got a UFC fighter, a former UFC fighter in Ben Askren, who also was quite a personality. I mean, these guys are selling the hell out of this fight. Like you said in the conversation with Peter Kahn, you know, boxers should be taking notes about how these guys are hawking their fights. Because this is exactly what the sport needs. And, you know, as much as some of these people have taken some pot shots at Jake Paul and how serious he is as a boxer, he's leaps and bounds beyond them in his ability to say, I've got a fight coming up, make sure you're watching it.
Yeah, and again, look, we understand if you're a hardcore boxing fan and this isn't your cup of tea, but that's not the point here. The point is that all these fighters in boxing, some of them are very good at it, mind you, but a lot of them aren't good at promoting themselves, and they only have themselves to blame, of course, along with their actual promoter, whose job it is to promote them. But this is a, you know, it's not just the job of the promoter itself. It's also the fighter. So you got to take it upon yourself if that's what you want to get in life. And in boxing, it really comes down to self-promotion. And we're seeing that with Jake Paul right now. And he's putting on a show on how to really get fans engaged and keep them engaged, I think. Lance, moving on to some fights that are happening this weekend, fights between world-class fighters. We have the rescheduled fight between Joe Smith Jr. and Maxim Vlasov. We had Joe Smith on the pod a few months ago when he was originally scheduled to do the fight before Vlasov came down with COVID. And Joe was really confident. I think Joe's improved a lot, as we said on that pod a couple of months ago. And this is another shot for him to finally become a world champion. I think he's going to get it done. I don't think it's a foregone conclusion, though. Maxim Vlasov is an awkward guy. He's a big guy, and he's a big puncher. So it's going to be a good fight, I think. And finally, Top Rank, no longer bubble boys. They finally break out of the bubble. It took them long enough, but they're going to be in Tulsa for this fight. So finally, live audience for them, and that's welcome.
Yeah, no doubt. I was talking to Timothy Bradley yesterday, Mike, and he was saying, you know, as he was getting ready to board his flight to Tulsa, that, you know, this is going to be, like you said, this is going to be a great test of heart for Joe Smith Jr. I mean, he's obviously shown his heart already, but he does have to get inside on Vlasov. He is going to have to put his chin at risk. He's going to have to show that he is, you know, a world champion fighter to be wearing that belt. And then I think the great thing about that is, you know, you have this very, you know, very strong East Coast fighter who has a pretty strong, I think, you know, personality, as we've talked about on the previous appearance on Pug and Cop. And, you know, waiting for him will be Artur Beterbiev, who's got the two belts in the light heavyweight division. That's going to be a great showdown. Another, you know, big unification that Top Rank can stage. It's there for the taking, and let's just, you know, let's see where it goes. But I can't wait to see a Joe Smith Beterbiev fight. You?
Lance, I'm really excited for that fight if it does happen. First of all, Joe Smith obviously has to win this Saturday, and then they have to actually make the fight. But if that fight does materialize for, you know, three belts, it's a great fight. Two big punchers, and I think, you know, Beterbiev showed enough vulnerability in that last fight against Adam Daines where you got to figure Joe Smith is a pretty live dog. So I hope it happens. But first, let's get past this Saturday. And another thing I'm really excited for is now at The Athletic, we finally have a documentary style podcast, the first one, and it's about my New York Knicks. You know, a lot of pain and misery over these last 20 plus years watching the Knicks. Not much to celebrate. Other than really that 2012, I think 2013, 2011 season when you had Jeremy Lin and Mari Stoudemire and Carmelo Anthony. But now we have a documentary called Shattered, Hope, Heartbreak, and the New York Knicks. And it's hosted by Chuck D from Public Enemy. And it's going to tell all the wild and crazy stories from, you know, Knicks owner James Dolan. We've heard plenty about him. He has his band JD in the Straight Shots. And then we're going to have a lot of people interviewed on that podcast. Former Knicks greats, Patrick Ewing, Penny Hardaway, who was on the Knicks, but, you know, of course, was a great on the Orlando Magic, Jamal Crawford, Nate Robinson, who Peter Kahn mentioned earlier. and we have a lot more, too. We have Jeff Van Gundy, Donnie Walsh, David Fizdale, Jeff Hornacek. I am all too familiar with some all these guys, for mostly for the wrong reasons, unfortunately, as a fan. But hey, look, the Knicks have been a lot better this year. Recently, though, finally, they're starting to lose a lot more. Probably a big result of Coach Tom Thibodeau and putting too many minutes on our all-star Julius Randle. But that is classic Thibs. So new episode of Shattered are released every Tuesday, and you can get that on Spotify, Apple, and on the Athletic app. All right, back to boxing now, Lance. We have more big fights on Saturday. We had Jaron Boutennis on the pod earlier this week. He's super confident. I'm excited for that fight, and I expect a Boutennis win, although I'm not sure if it's going to be a stoppage. That would be impressive. I'm going to say it's a decision victory. What do you think?
Wow, that's quite a pick. And well, I think he's going to stop him, Mike. I think this guy is special. I think he has special power, and I think it's enough to deal with a guy who, you know, let's be honest, he's probably most comfortable at 140 pounds. So I think Boutennis is going to get to him, and I think Boutennis is going to set in motion, you know, just exactly what a talent he is, and, you know, let the world, you know, put the world on notice that, you know, whether you're Errol Spence, Terrence Crawford, or whoever, I'm coming for you. I'm expecting Boutennis to really assert himself. And I would urge the listeners to please check out a story that I will be posting first thing Friday morning, not only on Boutennis, but on Cameron Duncan, a longtime manager in the sport, a guy who really kind of saw his career crumble at one point and was going to walk away from the sport. And then also, you know, it mentions the what Boutennis has meant to the Showtime franchise. Showtime has taken the hit of losing a lot of PBC fights to Fox, and the head of that company, Steven Espinoza, had to go scurrying for talent to other talent to, you know, for programming. And obviously finding someone like Boutennis and another Cameron Duncan fighter, Brandon Lee, has been sort of a gold mine for him at this point.
Yeah, I mean, Cameron Duncan making a big comeback. Brandon Lee, I'm really high on as well, like you said. And I could definitely see a stoppage. I just kind of lean to a decision because I know how tough Lipinets is. Maybe I'm giving too much, you know, credit to the Mikey Garcia performance. You're right, he isn't a natural 147. Ennis is a big guy. Maybe it is going to be a stoppage, but I would be surprised by an early stoppage. I think it would be a late stoppage or decision, Lance. And a fight I'm more confident in, Imantas Stanionis, who I think is a really good prospect and flying under the radar. He fights Thomas Delorme in that chief support bout on Showtime. I think Stanionis is going to stop Delorme maybe in the mid rounds. He's a big guy. He's a buzzsaw in there from Lithuania. And he really just grinds you down. He's so strong. I mean, Stanionis versus Ennis could be a big fight in a year or so. I do think Stanionis is going to be a future champion for sure, no doubt. And so is Ennis. So I know you've seen Stanionis in training before, Wild Card Lance, and of course at fights. What are your thoughts on him? Are you as high on him as I am?
Yeah, he's just, like you said, I mean, you use the word buzzsaw. He's relentless, Mike. I mean, this guy, he fights as if he has no fear of getting hit. He just, you know, sticks his head in there and lets those punches fly. And he's just hell-bent to finish these guys off. So, you know, now he's facing an older guy in Delorme, you know, a tough test, a guy who knows what he's doing in there. And for Stanionis, it's the type of test that exactly that he needs to say, like, hey, I'm ready for much more than where I'm at right now. And then also on that card, Mike, we've got the IBF Superfly weight belt title defense by champion Jerwin Ancajas of the Philippines against Jonathan Javier Rodriguez. A lot of people are expecting that to be perhaps the best fight of the night, that these are, you know, two guys who are going to be really going at it. And for Ancajas coming off a little bit of a layoff, it's going to be interesting to see what this guy has and how he can assert himself as a champion in a very deep division, right?
I don't know, Lance. Ancajas puts me to sleep. He's like maybe the only boring 115 pounder in the world. He's a good fighter, but we'll see. I'm I have cautious optimism that it's going to be a good fight, considering some of Kankaha's past performances. He's had some good fights too, but more bad than good. So we'll see there. But, you know, also some news. Jaime Munguia was supposed to fight Maciej Sulecki in a step-up fight on April 24th. Now he is fighting Demetrius Ballard on April 23rd, and Sulecki had to pull out with an injury. The reason the fight is moving a day earlier, I'm told, is because DAZN was planning to go in the afternoon to capitalize on the Eastern European audience, with Sulecki being a pretty big deal in Poland. Now that's gone, and now they also get to avoid the Jorge Masvidal-Kamaru Usman rematch UFC pay-per-view on April 24th at nighttime. So this will be at night on Friday night, still in El Paso. And
smart.
As our producer, Cam Molina, has given me shit for, I mistakenly, when I was reporting it the other day on Twitter, called Demetrius Ballard Chris Ballard, who's actually the GM of the Indianapolis Colts. And Cam immediately picked up on why I made the mistake. Chris Mannix, our buddy, chimed in and tagged Sports Illustrated writer Chris Ballard. But really, I was indeed thinking about the Colts GM. So, you know, if we're going to do, we'll see what, I don't know about the, you know, Chris Ballard, the actual Chris Ballard, the GM. I don't love that Carson Wentz trade, to be honest. I think Carson Wentz is a hype. I think he's a bit of a hype job, Carson Wentz. I don't think he cares all that much. I mean, anytime you get outplayed by a second rate guy like Nick Foles, who I think is one of the most overrated athletes of the past 10 years, I think you have to, I'm going to sell on the Colts this year.
I'd rather have Philip Rivers back, to be honest, Mike.
Man, Philip Rivers. Yeah, I think so too. Rivers is he's a gunslinger. He's gone now, retired. But by the way, I don't know what my dog is doing right now. He's running around. He's smelling the plants. He's rolling around in his bed. I don't know what the Colts are doing. I don't know what he's doing. But lastly, Lance, before we sign off, you know, we had the 130-pound rankings we went through. Had a lot of backlash on Twitter, as expected. A lot of people are taking umbrage with the fact that I had Tank Davis number one instead of Oscar Valdez, but I stand by it. And everyone's saying, oh, Miguel Burchell, how can he be top five? He just was number one before this. Well, first of all, I didn't have him number one. I had Tank Davis number one, who you don't want me to have number one. Second of all, Burchell wasn't even remotely competitive with Oscar Valdez and was knocked absolutely cold. So I don't think it's that crazy to drop him to number six from, I think I had a number two or three before. What do you think?
Well, the great thing, Mike, is that these rankings are fodder for discussion. We, you know, I don't know about you. I love the discussion with our readers, with our listeners. And, you know, go ahead and question us. That's what we're here for. I mean, we do enough questioning on our own. Feel free to question what our expert opinion is about all this. But look, we had the discussion about Tank Davis. I actually would be surprised if he fights again at 130. But I think given where he's at right now, you have to keep him in those rankings. And, you know, Oscar Valdez ultimately fighting Shakur Stevenson, I think, is going to be the best fight that that division can offer. I'm looking forward to that. And it's a packed division with Jamel Herring involved in it as well. So, you know, look, I think a lot of people are talking about that division right now. That's why you did the ranking. You were trying to, you know, let the readers know exactly how deep it is and just exactly what the strengths and weaknesses of all these guys are. So good work on that. And again, readers, I mean, don't ever hesitate. We want to hear your critiques. We want to hear your opinions. Let's have that conversation all day long.
Absolutely. We look forward to them. And we'll catch you all next week here on the Pug and Cop Boxing Show.